ladies and gentlemen, explorers, adventurers, wanderers, and survivors. My name is Jared, and with me, the wanderer, the explorer herself, Anna.
That's me, fresh back from all of my adventures.
With many more to come.
Oh, yes.
We will be your hosts for the episode. We are honored and grateful that you've joined us at our table. Today, we're at the Two Top Table, looking at and discussing Vantage. Designed by Jamie Stegmeier, artwork created by Valentina Felik, Soren Meding, and Emilienne Rotevel, and published by the wonderful and amazing Stonemeyer Games.
Vantage is a 1-6 player open world story-driven game. This game is an adventure where players have been emergency jettisoned from their malfunctioning spaceship and have crash-landed in various locations on a completely unknown planet. How will they survive?
I have no idea.
What secrets will they unfold?
Secrets?
Will they make friends? Is there even life on this planet?
Probably.
All of these decisions, except for the life part, you gotta discover that one. But the other decisions about what you do with these things are up to you. And each time you play, a new story of exploration and wonder is ready to be told. So let's settle in at the table and get comfy and discuss this game.
Sounds great. All right, Anna, I have a question.
All right.
We always start with a personal question involving the theme of whatever game we're discussing.
Yes. You seem like you're stalling on your question.
No. I was just curious. Did you have choose your own adventure games or choose your own adventure books growing up, and how did you feel about them?
Yes, I did have choose your own adventure books, and I absolutely hated them.
Oh.
Yep, they were awful.
Dang. Why did you hate them?
Well,
actually, you know what? We can talk about Vantage. No, I'm just kidding.
Now, everybody wants to hear about my troubled childhood with these books, Jared.
It's very important.
This is my therapy, you guys. So here we are.
You're here for us.
Yeah. No. So I remember being introduced to Choose Your Own Adventure books.
Yep.
I think it was the actual brand, Choose Your Own Adventure books, I'm pretty sure. And my parents gave me one on some long car trip we were going to do. And they were like, this is great. You know, you can have one book and you can read through it so many times and so many different stories and so many different endings. And I was so excited. And then I got so sad and depressed because it felt like almost every single ending, I just died somehow.
In a children's series.
Yeah, like gruesomely died. Like I would just like make a decision to go this way and I'd be like, whoops, you fell off a cliff, or whoops, you drowned. Like really, I'm not kidding. I wasn't just unlucky. Like I may have gotten a little bit obsessive.
Yep, probably.
Yeah. So, and for some reason, I decided to just immerse myself in the gore of this Choose Your Own Adventure book. And I just had to go through every single possible scenario and storyline and ending possible. And most of them you did die. I wasn't wrong. So I don't know if that's all Choose Your Own Adventure books or just that one, because I think maybe I tried one other one and it was the same. And then I just gave up on that genre altogether.
We weren't big readers in our house growing up. Books
sad times
just
for you
weren't a big part of our childhood. We did a lot of playing video games or playing outside, playing sports, things like that. And so there wasn't a lot of room for reading. And so I don't know that I had a whole lot of experience with that genre. I definitely never had enough experience to hate it as a child, but we definitely had like choose your own adventure activities. And obviously video game and computer games had different choose your own adventure games. So we did some of that and that was fun. We didn't die all the time. We actually kind of succeeded and felt like we enjoyed it.
Did you feel the need to explore all the various possible ways that you could die within the game?
No.
Strange childhood you
I'm
had.
Not
that
like,
you weren't like morbidly obsessed with that.
I actually feel like I'm the weirdo because I know a lot of people like sandbox games, whether it's like Zelda Breath of the Wild or whatever it may be. And usually I'm just not a big fan. Like, I like having the mission. I like having the linear story.
Ooh, you like being railroaded.
I do, actually. Yes, I do enjoy that. I don't mind being taken along for the story, and I'll participate along the way. I know, I'm the weirdo.
But everybody makes the big decisions for you that way.
You know, that's okay. Like,
all right.
I don't know. It doesn't bother me that much.
Well, Jared, I don't think I've told you this yet, but since we're on the topic, I just need you to know that a few weeks ago, I took our oldest daughter to a used bookstore and I showed her Choose Your Own Adventure books. So, and I told her, I was like, hey, you know, you're about the age, you know, she's 8 years old. Yep. You know, you're about the age to enjoy these. Mommy absolutely hated them. You might enjoy them. And she did decide to get a few of them. So I don't know if she'll end up just obsessively reading about her own death over and over again like I did, but I just thought you should be
prepared. I just wanted to make sure I understood correctly that you voluntarily chose to take our daughter to the used bookstore, and you decided that of all the books that are in this massive used bookstore, you went to the books that you hated as a child.
Well, we did a lot of other books as well.
Oh, okay. All right. I just want to make sure.
Yeah, it wasn't just those. I just kind of like, we went, there was on the series aisle, you know, and we were looking for all the series that she likes. Like, she likes the history ones and it's not. And we went past and I was like, well, she is at the age where she should decide for herself if she likes Choose Your Own Adventure books.
All right. Well, I guess we'll see. If we start to see an angry turn in her daily personality, we might know what's going on.
Interesting.
Okay. Anyways.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get into it.
Yeah, we should talk about this game.
Vantage.
Why don't you tell people how to play?
All right, very good. So Vantage is a open world sandbox adventure game where every game is its own game. Full stock and barrel. I don't know what I'm saying.
Stock and barrel is the phrase.
I know, but I don't feel like I'm using it correctly.
Probably not.
Nope. All right, very good. So it's all enclosed in the one adventure. There is no campaign. There is no carryover. There's no stickers. None of that. Okay, everything is very much confined to your one playthrough. And so each game starts the same, where we're on a spaceship. It's the distant future, and we are malfunctioning. And so we have to be jettisoned, like Anna was saying in the beginning, that we all crash land on this planet. But we all crash land in very different parts of the planet. And because of that, we don't know where everybody else is at. But because it's the future, our comms always work.
Planet-wide.
Conveniently.
Yeah.
Planet-wide.
Even underwater.
It's incredible.
Or in the sky.
Yeah. Everywhere. The comms are great. So cell phones have really improved in the future, which is great. I love that. But you can't see, there's no HUD, so you can't like see each other's like visual or anything like that. And so the game very much wants you to talk to each other and work together, but you have to describe what's going on in your game instead of just showing each other your cards. Now, the game wants you to really bring out that narrative. So you start out crash landing. You have a starting position that you're given. There's a ton of them. Like there's five or six cards that are dealt out. But on each of those five or six cards, there's like 20 plus
options. I was going to say, somewhere in the rule book,
about said, what you, like you roll dice to determine which story or which start you spot on.
I'm trying to see. It said how many.
It's a lot.
It's like 121 or something like that.
I don't doubt it.
I'm not finding it right off the bat.
That's okay. But basically you generate where you're dropped into the world. And there's so many different spots. Like I've been dropped into the jungle. I've been dropped directly into the ocean. Anna was dropped onto a lake before. We've had someone dropped into the mountains. We've had someone dropped directly into a city. Like there's just all these different spots. And so it really truly is, even though there's only five or six of the base start rolling dice, there's a lot going on there. And so once you have landed, you start exploring. Each card will have six actions that you can take. They are move, learn, engage, help, take, or overpower.
And those are, it's important to know that those are the categories. So like,
that's right.
For example, within the move category, there'll be different aspects. So if you're in the water, it might be swim. Because that's the movement you can do in the water. Or dive, because you can dive under the water. So they won't always say those things, but that's the category of what the movement or action is.
That's correct. And even within that, there's like subsections that are really wanting you to... So like in overpower, there might be one called fish. And there's certain actions tied... There's other cards that trigger based on fishing specifically. Even though there might be other overpower actions, they don't necessarily tie into the fishing component itself. And that'll be important when I describe what I describe here in a minute. So you have these six particular actions. You can also navigate to other parts of the world instead of taking one of the actions or after you've taken one of the actions. Because once you've taken one of the six actions on the card, you can't do another one for that particular game.
On the location card.
On that location card, correct. You have to move to a new location. The game does not want you to just sit in camp and keep doing all the actions. We'll just go ahead and cover very quickly if we're to have two players over come across the same card. It's very unlikely, at least what I've seen, but it is possible. So if I think
it would have to be intentional.
It would be. I think so. Yeah. And you'd have to kind of figure out the pattern. It would have to be in a longer game, I think, unless you just landed really close to each other.
You'd have to figure out how the map works and figure out how to find each other.
That's right. Yeah. But I always feel like, in the games we've played, and maybe it's just the way the dice have rolled, we've been very far apart. But regardless, if I were to interact with something on a card, let's say I took a relic or something, if Anna stumbles across that card later on, she can't take the action that would take the relic because the relic's not there anymore. And so the game very much wants you to have theme trump everything else. And that's
called the Universal Rule of Thematic Fun.
Wow.
In the rule book. Is that you need to, it's an important rule to make sure that everything makes sense thematically and fits within the story.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So you do your action, and then the other things, there's actions on other cards. So like your character has a set of actions that you could do instead of doing the location interaction. You could, like I said, move to other cards. You can also, sometimes you'll have equipment that will have actions on them. And sometimes you're trying to complete various quests or destinies or things like that. The mission itself will have actions on it. There's lots of actions everywhere. So you're not constantly moving all the time. You might be just sitting in one place and doing five or six things. And so whenever you take one of these actions, no matter where it comes from, it's going to have a difficulty associated with it. Sometimes, like on the equipment, you just do the action. There's not a narrative element added into it, and you just do it. When you do a location action, each card is numbered. So if I do the help action on card 541, then I give the green book to Anna because that is the help action, and she will look up that number. There is a bolded text that she will give me, and then I will go ahead and roll. It's not to see whether you succeed or not. It's really just determining.
It's like the cost of your success.
The cost. So each black die, which is the challenge dice, have blank dice, which is great. You want a blank side. You have setback, which basically, instead of taking your challenge dice to the exhausted pool, it goes back to the pool where it could be rolled again. And then the other sides of the challenge dice are you have a heart, a star, and an hourglass. And that stands for your health, your morale, and your time. And so if you run out of time, or if you run out of health, or your morale just goes to crap, then that triggers usually an end game. Sometimes, not always, but it will basically trigger you to read a part of the story and tell you what happens next. And then that kind of affects the game going forward. But regardless, after you've rolled, there's a variety of ways to get rid of these dice instead of just taking the hit. A lot of the cards, whether it's your character card or equipment or whatever, can take on these dice. And basically, you don't take the damage, they just take the hit for you. But that also covers up that spot. So in the future, you're rolling more risk. But once the person that is taking an action needs to roll challenge dice and there's not enough in the pool, then you reset the dice and everything comes off the cards and you basically have a fresh slate for things to absorb dice once more. You continue exploring for a while. It's very much, I don't know a good way to say this, I guess. It's very much, you get to do what you want. It is truly a sandbox. There is a mission, just like in like a legend, like Zelda or whatever. There is a main goal that you're trying to complete, but often that main goal can be superseded by a destiny that you find. You might get so wrapped up in just exploring that you forget or don't have any interest in the mission at all. And there is actually...
the game says that you can end at any point in time without having to do that if you want
to. Yeah, the game says that. Yeah. And so you might just decide, you know what? This character has done what it wants to do. It would be very against this character to want to go complete the mission. So I'm done now. And it's very weird. And there's
personal missions that characters can get as well.
Yeah, quests. That's right.
Personal quests, yes.
They don't trigger the end game, but they do...
No, but I'm saying that would be a reason why a character, other than just sandboxy play, you know, would want to do something different than the mission. And those aren't things you can choose to get. Those are things that you acquire through certain actions in the game.
And you do see that a lot. You do see a lot of, you'll understand what this is for when the time comes. And it might not be in the same game. And so you might have to find it again, or it might just be lost to the void forever. But regardless, again, it is that sandboxy kind of structure. So there is not a true end game. Even when we've completed missions, one of the things that it says is you can continue on to work on X or Y destiny or any destinies that you've already collected along the way. Or you can choose to just be done. So it's very much a true cooperative, true collective at the table deciding, do we want to keep playing?
Now, the game does end after a destiny, though.
Yes.
A destiny is a hard stop to the game.
A destiny is a hard stop, but you don't have to trigger your destiny if you wanted to keep exploring.
Yes. Okay.
The true, like, you lose, there's a way to lose, but as long as you're not dying, like, much like in real life, you're okay. So, that's more or less how to play. We don't really want to show any cards or anything because literally every card technically acts as a spoiler. And so there's a lot of different books in here that cover a lot of ground, and we're going to talk about all of that, but that's how to play.
Yeah. So I want to talk about the artwork first in this game, because if you're going to get a game that has over 1500 cards in it, I think you want some good artwork to go along, especially if this is a game about exploring a planet and finding out different things about the landscape and the architecture and the ruins and the sentient beings that may be on that planet. And so what did you think about the artwork in this game?
I think the artwork is so unique. You know, whenever I sit down to think about what I want to do next for my next D&D campaign or things like that, I really have tried to start pushing myself to do things that are a little bit more weird and more things you'd find in imagination land. Not necessarily like trying so hard to make it structured and this is how it would work in real life and blah, blah, blah. Like there's a natural artistic creativity that I try to push myself towards. And I think that Jamie really did that with Vantage. It's just like there's things that you recognize, like a pirate ship or a hermit in the woods, but all the beings like are so unique in the way that they inhabit this world and the way that they are designed. And at first, I remember when we first started playing, we were looking at the card and we're like, wait, where's the being that's looking at us because of the way that the card was set up? And then when we saw it, we're like, oh, I get it now. Okay, got it. But it's very unique. And
they look very alien.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Like it very much leans into that.
Yeah.
But there's just such a, I don't know, such a vibrancy to the colors. And I really enjoy it a lot. So what did you think?
I agree. I thought that the colors were vibrant. I thought the landscapes were well done where it looks big and you look like I could look to my left or my right and see what's happening, because almost all the landscapes you can go north, south, east, or west out of that landscape. And they went together. I mean, you have to return a landscape card when you get a new landscape card, but I just really wanted to cheat. I didn't tell you about this, but I really wanted to cheat and keep them and like actually line them up and see if they went together, because I think a lot, not all of them would, but I think a lot of them would. And then it's like you get this whole landscape effect across, which would be really cool. So anyway, I thought the artwork as well, was impressed that the sentient beings looked like aliens, looked like unknown, mysterious. I don't know if this thing's happy or sad or what its customs are. Which is neat, because then you've got a lot of different options you can do either on the card, or you didn't mention the 3x3 grid that you can have around your character of different cards, and you can collect friends, abilities, tools, things like that, items. And a couple of times I've been able to collect a sentient, and that sentient has options and ways that I can interact with it on my card. And I have no idea what's going to happen. Like, I don't feel like I can read these things because they're so alien. So, yeah.
Which very much adds to the theme. Like, you're unsure. Like, there was one time, I think it was in the last game that we played, I stumbled across this. Well, I don't want to see, it's so hard. But essentially, it was a situation where I was like, oh, there's friends in here. I'm going to go make friends. And then you go in and they're like, well, they don't want me to be here. And they're all upset and chasing me now, which was very like contrary to a lot of the engagement that we'd had up to that point of the sentience. And so I really appreciated that variety.
Well, and I engaged at one point in time, a sentient that was trapped and freed it and then went to go battle a whole pirate gang, you know, so that was a fun.
That's true.
That was a fun.
Yeah, for sure.
That was a really fun game. I kind of went rogue in that game.
Yep.
You guys were like, are you ever coming back down to Earth?
No, we kind of assumed you were goner. That you just...
Well, because I was up in the sky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
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 Okay.
No, yeah. But no, the other thing I like about the artwork is something you alluded to a minute ago, like with the lining them up. Like as you move west or as you move to a different location, you never lose the immersion.
Yeah.
Of going from, like, I'm still in this forest. It still very much lines up with the way it was before. And that's so important for a story game because you don't want to be flipping from card to card and being like, wait, am I still in the same place? And that's just such a daunting task. You got over 800, I think you got roughly 800 actual location cards. So to have all those tie in the way that they're supposed to, just an incredible feat. Everything about this game, even if I didn't like it, I would say it's an incredible work.
Yes.
Because of the amount of effort and time and mathematics and story that you have to keep up with to be able to create something like this. I can't even comprehend it. Like, my brain can't work that way. And so I am very impressed by the structure of how this all came together.
And we're talking about visual artwork, but I think it's worth mentioning the literary artwork that's in this as well, because a lot of what you're looking at a picture, but what everybody else is hearing is what you're describing about the picture. And then what's read out of the different books that Jared said, because whenever you do an action for any kind of a card, depending on what color that action is, you know, which of the skills that action is associated with, you get that color book and you read that story. And so there's this, there's a literary artisticness to it of the storytelling and the words that are used. And like you said, going in, the way that it was phrased at the beginning is, oh, do you want to go in and talk to these factory workers? So you thought, I'm going to go in and talk. Sure.
We're going to make friends.
And then come to find out,
that was a terrible
decision. They got very agitated and then you had to decide what to do next. And so, just the way that the words are crafted and put together really adds to the immersion aspect. I don't think you can neglect that when talking about artwork as well.
I would completely agree. And even though it's just like a few sentences of text for each one.
Yeah, it's not overbearing.
It
for sure.
Well, not only that, but the way that those few sentences are strung together really still does a great job of painting the picture of what you have going on.
Yeah, they had a good editor.
Yes, very, very much so.
Really good at narrowing it down. And so I'd say, are we moving on from artwork?
Yeah, we
now?
Can do that.
Yeah. So I'd say that my initial draw to this game was the theme.
Oh, 100%.
Thinking, okay, we're exploring an uncharted planet. That sounds fun. We can engage with these different cards and string them together and figure it out. That sounds fun. But the surprise within all of that was how interconnected the cards are, even apart from the mission. So, for example, I could go and repair something and then somebody else could go and benefit from that later on in the game. Or I could discover a rune and do something there, but then if somebody else discovered another one on another part, they could also add to it and it could kind of work together. I could discover part of a story that then is fulfilled by somebody else that discovers another part of the story on another part of the planet. Not to mention the fact that we've crash landed in different parts. We're only getting our eye shot, but there's certain times where you can get a vantage point and be able to see a little bit more of the map and a little bit more of the pieces of how all the puzzle fits together. So the interconnectedness of the stories, again, completely unrelated to the missions, although the mission, we didn't play through all of the missions. So the missions may bring in some of those things later, but there's all sorts of like ruins you can explore, relics and runes and puzzles you can figure out and people you can rescue. And there's just story within story within story within story. And the way that it all connects together is just a very beautiful aspect of the game.
Yeah. I think something else too that I was not expecting to get as into as I did. There's some cards that are like puzzles, and I immediately latched onto that and was like, oh, I've got to get this right. Because there is this like weird tension of I've got one shot at anything I choose to do. And so when it becomes not just making a decision about an action, but I've got to get the puzzle right, then there's that added layer of like, oh, I don't want to miss out on this because I can't ever come back to it in this game.
Yeah. So did you like that aspect of the game that you could only do one action per card? So you're, any choice you make, you're missing out on five other choices. What did you think about that part of the game?
Most of the time I really like it. I would prefer to be forced to explore instead of just sitting and camping on one spot, because then you can kind of game it a little bit, mm-hmm. and kind of be like, okay, now I want to do this and now I want to do that. But then there's sometimes, it's not very often, but there are sometimes that I'm like, I really want to do both of these, and narratively I feel like it fits and I can't do that. And so it does in a way break that immersion, because I'm like, this isn't what a character would do. I wouldn't just choose to prepare and then not do this other thing. And so that it's not very often. I think I would keep it, but there are moments where you have to deal with the backlash of that.
Yeah, that makes sense. And
did it bug you at all?
Not too much. I think at first it felt like the Choose Your Own Adventure books, where I'm like, yeah. Oh man, I want to know what the other five options are. But as I, you know, played several games, I'm seeing that that's part of figuring out the game
is
figuring out what's the best action. And so you can do any one of those six skill actions on any location, but some of them just don't make as much sense as the other ones, or don't seem to fit with the theme and what you've discovered so far. So there actually really are right and wrong answers, even though there are six choices in terms of what's going to progress you or get you the biggest bonus. And so, I mean, you're looking for kind of clues in the picture and clues in the text that is on the picture and clues in what you've already known to be able to figure out what the best action is on that card. And so in that respect, knowing that they're not all six equal options, I think it's fun to, okay, I have to pick one. Let me try to make it be the best one that I can for what I'm trying to get out of this.
And that's the thing. Like, I don't know if it's right or wrong. I think it's more of, do I want something more difficult? Do I want something that lines up with my character? Like, those are the sorts of questions that I'm asking.
Yeah. I mean, I would consider those to be right or wrong,
I guess,
questions. Like, this does line up, this doesn't.
But it
this
also
does progress me, this
it
doesn't.
Also, like, I don't know, there's something about this game that, because you only have the one action, like, it makes me want to go for it more.
Yeah.
Instead of playing it safe. Like, there's times where I'm like, yeah, let's just see what happens. And last game I got cursed twice, but we figured it out.
Cursed all over the place.
That's true. It was a wild time.
And then you're the one that accomplished the mission.
Yeah.
At the end. So,
that's right.
Hey, it's good.
It is interesting. Like, I think most of the games that we played, my character was the one that ended up creating the mission, like, goal. Like, we finished it through my character. But spent almost no time. Like, you were the one in the one game, they were like, guys, we have to get this stuff. And I was like, I don't care. Like,
yeah.
I don't care at all. I'm just exploring.
And I kept collecting stuff, being like, all right, I'm this close. And they were with it, like, because we've played with multiple people, and then we've played just the two of us, yeah. And decided it played better that way. That's why we're recording as a two top, mm-hmm. which we'll talk about probably later. But yes, that was a thing where I was just working, and then you just stumbled across something that made you complete the mission.
So it was like, it's just ridiculous. Very, I don't know. It's very interesting to like have both. I don't care about the mission. I'm just going to do my own thing. And then also, oh, look, here it is. Like, I've got it, kind of thing. So
yeah. Well, and there was one game that we played where I got very caught up in this idea of the side mission.
Yes.
And kind of wandered around in circles. But here's the thing. If you wander around in circles and you get back to a card you've been to before, you still can't do any of the other actions on the card.
No, you can't just bounce back and forth.
So that, honestly, I think I maybe went wrong because I ended up back where I started when I was following the directions to get to something. And so that's honestly another one of the fun parts of the game is that if I play the game again, it's a totally fresh mission. It's a totally fresh scenario. But me as a player, I have some extra knowledge about the cards in that location that may cause me to interact with them differently or choose a different choice. So, I mean, you can really, even though it's not a legacy game, it doesn't go follow a storyline through the whole thing. I mean, you could go back and complete all the side quests you want once you remember them and remember where they are, and you could figure out exactly how all those cards work together.
Well, and it's interesting because on the flip side of that, like if you're not into that as much, like there's so many cards that and maybe I'm just thinking about it wrong, but I feel like the odds of stumbling across multiple cards that are similar to the ones you've experienced before, like you'd have to play this game a lot before you finally start doing that.
Some of them. I'm just saying, so as you get more of a knowledge of the map itself and how it works, because again, you can zoom out and it'll give you little glimpses of the map and where you are in the map. So we've played it several times and we love it, but we have definitely not played it to the point where we would actually be able to know, oh, hey, I'm in this ocean. I know that's in this part of the map. If I go north enough, I'll get to this other part. Sure. And you could play it enough to get to that part and really just plumb the depths and see, now I'm getting into my choose your own adventure obsessive nature, I guess. And you're like, why would we do that? Let's just play the missions. Blah, 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 blah. Railroad me. But I think that's a really cool aspect of the game is that you really could figure it out enough to go and do all the side quests and figure out all the stuff.
Well,
that'd be fun.
And that I think is another perk of this game is that this game offers what you want it to be.
Yeah.
It's something where if you want to just explore, you just go explore. If you want to focus on this mission, great. Go work the mission. If you want to learn all about this world down to the finest details and map it out, you can do that. It's all there. So I love the different things that it offers.
And when you play solo, so we mentioned it plays 1 to 6 players. Mm-hmm. When you play solo, you're still only playing one character, and the game encourages you to only play one character because
it wants that immersion.
Then you can just go on this nice immersive journey by yourself.
Right.
I mean, it's fun to have multiple people and be saying, oh, here's what I see.
Yeah.
I don't know where I'm at in the world, but here's what I see. You know, or I'm going south and I've hit an ocean now, you know, and you can do stuff like that. But I think it's just as immersive in as far as the exploring aspects and the figuring out the puzzles aspects to play just one player as well. Be very enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about player count, because this game plays 1 to 6 players. We have not played at 6 players, but my instinct says that I would not be interested in playing it at 6. I think that there's already a lot going on, even at a 3-player game, with the different levels of story from the 3 different characters. And I found myself at certain points during the games when we're 3+ going like, okay, I want to get back to my story. Like, it's cool that you're doing this and it's cool that you're doing that, but this is the thing that I'm doing and I got to sit here and wait for you to do your thing, which is fine. But, and it does, like, there is collaboration. I don't want to be whatever about that. But I do feel like at times the game is collaborative. The stories are separate.
Yeah, it's like you had a D&D campaign and you just split the party at the very beginning and that was it.
Well, and it's interesting because like I've often wondered, is that part of getting better? Is that you learn how to meet up or you learn how to use each other's locations as a like bonus somehow?
Oh, 100%. But, yeah. I mean, and because there's parts of the puzzles to the game scattered all over the world. And so I could discover a gemstone that you need up in the north or this rune here and this rune here. And how do we connect them and get them oriented the correct way or whatever? So, yes, I think the answer is yes. But I think you can enjoy a playthrough without all of that. But I think that's part of getting better at the game and learning more about the game and just kind of plumbing the depths. I mean, we've had great experiences and have barely scratched the surface of this game.
Sure, I agree.
And I do think that that's part of getting better is figuring out how things work together, even from across distances in the planet.
Right.
I'm with you, though. Man, I don't know how it would play with six players. I think it'd be an all day long thing, and I'd be getting up and fixing myself snacks in between people's turns.
My books.
Yeah, just, it would take a little while to do that.
That's unfair because you are all reading each other's stories.
Yeah.
So you're still participating. There's not really downtime, but it is something where like, I don't know. Like, I just, when we played it too, I enjoy it so much more.
Yeah.
Because
the story just keeps pace better and things are feeling more adventurous. Playing it more than two felt like a lot more like a leisurely stroll and like less was getting accomplished just because, again, you've got so many storylines going at the same time.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so that's something to think about. Like, as you're looking at this box, you're like, oh, cool, we can do this six players. Like, you can. It's going to be an epic, and I don't know how much you're going to really enjoy it. Now, that being said, the more characters you have and the more those characters are gathering friends and equipment and whatever, from a game perspective,
you're learning a lot more.
You're learning mm-hmm. so much more, but it does take you a little bit out of the immersion. So it's like, what do you want? So we will probably play it at four because we'll end up introducing it to other couples and things like that. I would never want to play with more than four. That's just my own personal preference mm-hmm. on that.
And again, the reason why we're doing it as a two-top is because we enjoyed it most with two.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of the ability to experience the collaboration with the two of us where you would lose that with a solo game. Like, it's just on you, but there's still some collaboration from the game side. You get to keep up with each other's stories better, and you can kind of be like, hey, what do you think about this? Like, we did that some in the higher counts too, but it was much more, you wanted to keep things churning because there was more people's stories going on. And so you would just kind of like let them make their decision.
That's true. But with the two of us, we sat and thought about it for a little bit and discussed, oh, I think this action might be better. I think this action might be better for that scenario.
And the amount of time it takes to play is very much dependent on the player count. Like some of it's dependent upon, do you want to just explore or mm-hmm. do you want to focus on the mission? Because if you just focus on the mission, you might get done a lot faster than you normally would, but then you lose out on some of the exploration. So that also impacts your length as well.
Yeah. And the game says 2 to 3 hours for playtime. I think you could play in a shorter amount of time just because you can end whenever you want to. Or if you're playing with a lower player count of one or two players and you're really focused on the mission. But I mean, I'd say give it 2 or 3 hours. You get more immersion and more story that way.
I think the two-player game we played the other night, though, we got that done fairly quickly and still felt like we got a significant amount of game in.
Yes, but if it hadn't been so late, I would have said, let's keep going for the Destiny because I'm still trying to figure out this puzzle.
Yeah.
No, and we just went ahead and ended it after the mission because of that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it could have gone on longer. I think we were at maybe an hour and a half and definitely could have gone to 2 hours if we had played the Destiny afterwards.
No, I agree with that.
Well, is there anything about this game that you would like to kind of caution people about or that you didn't particularly like, Jared?
Well, I'll just say the obvious. If you don't like story games, this will not be for you. If you want a railroad. Yeah. I mean, get out of here. It's centered around story. That's just what it is. And so if that's something that you're not into, you want to run mathematics on a thinky Euro game, then there's other options before. This game is the ultimate experience that I've experienced in tabletop from a board game perspective. And I am very, very much beyond impressed. When I first heard about the concept of Vantage, I had high hopes, but never in my wildest dreams would it have been this. With just the amount of immersion and expansiveness to this world through cards. I will say, you know, we talked about the stories, and I think for me, I haven't looked through all the mission cards, so this might be a little bit unfair, but I wish that the missions, I don't know, I almost wish the mission wasn't even there and that there was an easier way to collect destinies along the way, because then it's more in line with what you're building your character to do.
What you're building your character.
Because there was one, like, it was about, you know, trying to find X amount of value and have it on your person. And I'm like, I'm living in the woods. I don't care about that.
No, that one was about survival, though, like stockpiling it and was, surviving and stuff, which is thematic to the game.
It is to the game. But for my character, I was like, I'm just living off the land and I'm just making friends and I don't need all this stuff. And so it just felt a little contradictory to what I was doing. So, but the destinies aren't just, you know, you can't just always have them. So I don't know what you do with that. Like this is just. It's like nitpicky things.
Yeah. And you could play a game and not even come across a destiny as well.
That's true.
You're not always guaranteed to get a destiny in a playthrough. So I think that's why the mission is there. But then you have the option to do a destiny and complete and end the game that way instead.
Yeah.
So I think the mission might be there because you have to have something. And then the option to switch to a destiny is in case, like you said, you want to end the game in a way that's more in keeping with your story arc instead.
Right. No, there and it does facilitate. Like I don't think it's a huge critique, but I have not been in a game yet where I've been excited about the overall mission. I've been much more interested in the exploration side of it. What about you?
I have a small thing as well, and I think it can be tweaked in future gameplays. Okay. But I never felt like there was a huge risk to what I was doing. So in terms of me dying, that's what I mean. So, and there's ways to do that. So you start on a track that goes from 0 to 6. And if any of your three markers get down to 0, that's your kind of like end game or really, really bad scenario.
Sure.
And so we were pretty careful to just not let our things get anywhere close to that. And you can also,
I had a couple games where they were though.
I never did.
You're just amazing.
You can start higher up or lower down on the track. So you can make it more risky yourself. And you can also choose to only engage in actions for which you have skill tokens. And you can turn in skill tokens in order to negate some of the challenge dice that you have to do. So maybe I just like managed that a little bit better. But I remember thinking partway through the game, yeah, we just keep rolling the challenge dice, placing them, and then resetting them. Like there's no real risk to anything that we're doing. And the other interesting part is that when you know what the challenge dice rating is, you're already committed to that skill. So I couldn't decide, for example, oh, I want to do that. Oh, it's 6 challenge dice and I'm almost dead. Never mind. I don't want to do that. So that's a very small, but a little bit of a critique of, I just didn't feel like dying was all that real of a concept. And at times I was like, I wish there felt like there was a little bit more risk to what I was doing. Now it was puzzly and fun and exploratory, but it didn't feel particularly risky. So
I disagree with that. There was multiple times where I was like, my guy is going to die. If I roll poorly here, it's over. And I felt that multiple times. And then when you have those situations where you have 6 dice and you can't get rid of any of them because you don't have any skill tokens left, then you're like, okay, well, here we go. So I think those moments do exist. I do agree with you that it's not.
I'm used to games, I think, where I'm constantly trying. I'm thinking like Dead of Winter or something, where like you're constantly on the verge of death trying to manage your resources so you stay alive. And it wasn't that kind of thing.
Your childhood trauma is just coming through and you're like, wow, this thing's not trying to kill me at every turn. I get it. It's weird.
I haven't died yet. What in the world?
What is this? No. But I think I do understand the want for a challenge and to feel like me doing this action could be really bad. And I think it could. I think, you know, just kind of, you could have a bad dice roll and that could be it. So it just kind of depends. But I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. And I guess when I got to that point, like when my tokens got within even 2 points of 0, mm-hmm. and I was like, man, if I roll 2 of something, I can't place it. That's going to be a problem. That's when I would go to my cards in my grid and I would equip more stuff so I could get more skill tokens before I rolled the dice.
That's true.
So again, it never felt like I was imminently going to die at any point that I didn't even think.
I've noticed that in games, Anna is a hoarder. She loves stuff. And so it's a pattern I'm seeing. Can't deny it.
I just think I manage my resources well better than you.
Not a denial.
So, okay. Ahem.
Anyways, outside of that, though, I don't know that there's a whole lot that I would critique about this game. I think for what it is wanting to do in being a massive experience in immersion, is storytelling and adventure, it does that in spades. Mm-hmm. And I am just, again, so blown away when my expectations were already so high. And if you like story, if you like adventuring, I would highly recommend you give this a shot because
like puzzles, like
it's got the whole thing,
all those things,
and you can. Even if you like don't want to do a lot of a certain type, like you can do the thing and then move on to another part of the world relatively easily. So it gives you a lot to work with. You could play this game for a very long time and a lot of plays without feeling like you've exhausted it just because there are that many different stories and connections and things like that. So for me, I'm just so blown away again by the design that it's really hard for me to critique it because I still like think about just the amount of work. And I know Jamie put in like 8 years of work for this, like just the amount of brain power and just different calculations it would take to tie all these things together. Cause it's not just stringing together one story. It's how they can also tie into other stories as well. So it's just Jamie, great job, man. We're just very impressed.
So some other things we will usually cover in the podcast, we're just going to kind of go through it kind of quickly since you've already spent a long time just gushing. So we talk about table space. Sometimes you're going to want a bit of table space for this. You're going to need room for the big board where you track, you know, your health and time and morale and your mission and your challenge dice and those kind of things. You each have a player character and your 9x9 grid. And then you've got all of these books, which we kind of kept in a stack and just riffled through when we needed them. But I mean, you need a little bit of room for passing all those things back and forth. And then one player manages the box, which is where you take the cards out. And then whenever you change locations, you put the card immediately back. And so there's not a lot of setup or cleanup really too badly, but you do need a little bit of table space to feel like you can play it comfortably.
For as much as you have going on in this game, it does not have a massive footprint. I am very impressed with the efficiency in which it does not take up too much space.
Right. But I mean, our running joke on our two tops is,
you're right,
could you play it on an airplane table, on an airplane tray? And no, you cannot. Could you take it to a restaurant for a date night? I mean, you could, but it'd be kind of hefty. Yeah,
I don't think I would want to do that.
Yeah. So you're going to want some table space for this one. That's all I was saying with that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think that's pretty much everything. If you were to give it a final score, what would you give it?
I mean, I have to give it an A+. It really, I was excited about it before I did it, and it superseded all of my expectations. I was just, especially the interconnectedness of everything and all the puzzles within puzzles. And there's just, it feels like there's a million things that I still didn't get to experience, even though I've wanted to play it every single day since we got it.
That's true. It's as a testament to what you were saying.
Yeah.
I cannot remember the last game that you came out at 10 o'clock at night and you were like, just who cares that we have to get up early tomorrow?
It's true.
Who cares about any of that? I don't care. I want to play this game again. And I was like, okay, I mean, I'm game, but
it's true. Well, because I thought we were going to play it earlier in the day and it was all worked out. It was going to be great.
Yeah.
And then our kids dumped the box. And Jared had to reorganize single card. It took like an hour.
Dump the box.
In fact, the box advises you to like, there's ways to set it up where you don't even look at anything.
Alone.
And that's what you want to do. You want to not look at anything. Anyway, so A+, I will say that it is rare that I come across a game where I feel like this is almost brand new. This has not been done before. And I felt that in playing the game. Now, there's other story games.
Yeah.
There's other kind of like card and figuring out and things like that games. But the way that it did it, I had that feeling of, oh my goodness, this is a brand new board game thing. And so that's my A+.
Nice.
How about you?
I would give it an A+ as well. Stonemaier's done it again. This game is incredible. And it has exceeded expectations for what I wanted this to be. And we're excited to show this one to the kids, because we think that we can help walk them through that.
The game is rated for 14+. I'll say that there are I think for the technicality of some of the language, potentially some of the themes, but I mean, we think we're going to play along with our kids and try to let them experience it as well, even though they're a little bit younger than that.
But it's definitely one that stays in the collection for a long time. We're very happy with it.
Did you feel like it was new?
Yeah. I haven't played like Tales of the Arabian Nights or things like that. So this felt very fresh.
Yeah.
A very different experience
And that's true. And even Ian, having played Tales of Arabian Nights when he was playing it with us,
yeah,
he was noticing similarities, but still felt like a really good new game of that.
No, I agree. I think it is. And I just love every time we've played it, the story that I've experienced has been so different and so unique. And to have the same starting point, but continue to have that feeling is so cool.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, that's our review of Vantage. We want to say thank you so much for listening. If you have feedback or want to give us your thoughts on the game, we would love to hear from you. All of our links will be in the description, and please feel free to reach out however you'd like. We would love to discuss, because I'm all about talking about, I just said earlier, I think about this game all the time. And so I'd love to talk about it, or any other game that we review, or any game that you want to talk about. If you have, you know, any critiques or things that you think we can do better, we've had some listeners that have chimed in and said, hey, what have you thought about this? And I love that. So please give us more of that. And 5-star reviews, if you're listening on the podcast, you know, like and subscribe if you're on YouTube. All those things are very helpful. It's all the things that everyone says, so you know what to do. But please know that even though we've gotten so used to doing it, it is beyond appreciated. Having done this now for 2 years, I have learned to appreciate the value of just clicking a thumb. And I know that's silly to say, but it means so much to us. It's very much appreciated for anyone who does it. So special thanks to Anna for the music on this episode, as well as Alexi Chistelin for the How to Play background music. And I don't know if you've noticed, we have a new logo. Thank you to Ashley McCaffrey, because she did a fantastic job of giving us a uplift on our logo. And so thank you to all of you who've come together to help us out. Enjoy your time at the table, and may your dice rolls and your card draws be blessed, and may your experiences at the table be ones to remember forever.
Bye.